Hey, Steele, how you
Dave
doing?
Jensen. Dave, I'm doing terrific.
Boy, Steele, I want you to know what tonight was at my house. Are you ready? I
I'm so ready. Tell me.
don't know that you are ready, but I'm going to tell you anyway. We had
Okay.
meatloaf tonight.
Oh.
How many decades has it been since you've had meatloaf?
The last time I had meatloaf, I was in my teens, Dave.
In your teens.
It
So
was
it's been about four decades.
probably 4 or 5 decades, yeah.
We ate meatloaf and I got excited. So during the meal, I of course went to my computer and turned on I Would Do Anything for Love really loud as we ate meatloaf. It was meatloaf night at my house. It was awesome.
And when the girl started talking, did you just shush him and say, "Respect the music"?
I stood up on the couch and sang along with Meatloaf. Yeah, no one's talking during that song. Everybody was shocked, the silence, the babies were staring off in the distance like they finally understood why they were on the earth. It was Meatloaf night.
That's so good. Actually, Dave, my mom really, really liked that song when it came out. And
Course
I
she
bought her
did.
the CD from the BMG Music Club. And then she saw the cover art or whatever, and she's like, "I don't know if I really." She had second thoughts. She had qualms.
When you listen to the song, and the album version is 12 minutes long, by the way, which is
Not long
excellent.
enough.
No. Ariane only wanted me to play the 5.5 minute version, which was ridiculous.
Come on, Ariane. The album version's where the true artistry shines.
Speaking of deeper understanding,
Yeah.
I brought a friend tonight. I have a friend.
Yeah.
I may be taking it. I don't know if he actually considers himself a friend, but he's here tonight. This is Jason.
I consider you like, yeah, you're a friend. You're a friend to me.
Jason, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
What's the ambient temperature outside your home right now?
I would say roughly 105 degrees.
Wow. Yeah, that's too hot for me. And it's night right now.
Yeah, it's night. Yeah, I came home today on my hoverboard. I'm like the last known human being riding on a hoverboard. It was
It's just robots.
Just 117 or 18 on my way home, and it's an interesting feeling.
But with the speed you get up on your hoverboard, you get a good breeze going, right?
Yeah.
And it's breeze
It's okay.
above the body and below since you're actually hovering in air.
Yeah. Well, did you guys hear that they couldn't fly the airplanes at Sky Harbor recently, or American Airlines could not yesterday? Yeah.
Was it too hot?
It was too hot. So they canceled flights, and it was something to do with air gets hot enough, it expands, and then it just couldn't support the weight of the planes anymore. So
No way. There's just not enough room in the air for an airplane today.
yeah. So anyways, when I hoverboard, that's kind of what happens too when it's this hot. So
And Jason, is that an original Georgia O'Keeffe painting behind you? Is that what that is?
this is Lee Reynolds.
Oh yeah, also well known.
Yeah, you won't be able to see it. There's their signature right here.
Okay. Yeah, maybe we should post that to a pic that painting to the website just
Yeah.
to.
It's
We'll have to
about,
put a
I don't know, 4 feet by, about 4 by 4 feet, something. It's
parental
pretty large.
advisory needs to go with that image though, Dave. We gotta code that NC-17. Pretty explicit.
Yeah,
That's
very
a
sensual
flower.
flowers.
This is very
For your
sensual.
listeners, yeah. That'll be nice for your listeners who can't see it.
Yeah.
They'll think it's something.
They'll be able to experience it.
Lewd.
Well, we got some good segments, good things to go over tonight. And Steele, I don't know if you know this, Jason is a physicist.
Wow.
He likes physics.
Great. We have a physicist in the family, a medical physicist in our family.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's kind of what some of the work I'm doing is.
Medical
Definitely.
physics? Wow.
Yeah.
It's an expanding field. But so Jason, we're going to do our segment that we love called Expert Testimony. We're going to talk to you about physics. And right now you're doing, are you done with your doctoral prod, your PhD project? Where are you at with it?
So I'm into the last part of it. and I probably have about a year or so before I can defend it.
So what is it? I know it's in the realm of medical physics, right?
Yeah, my research is the Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale. It's a hospital. It's a pretty well-known hospital around the country. Mm. They have one in Scottsdale. And they have a $200 million proton therapy facility. And basically, proton therapy is a new... It's not a new type of radiation treatment, but it's one that has just recently been developed to the point where it can really be used to help people. So essentially, I'll just describe what proton therapy is. It's a very simple idea. It'll be a cancerous tumor, and they'll just literally shoot it with protons. So you have this huge device. It's about about 10 meter diameter ring. Like it's called a synchrotron. So it's just a beam that goes basically in a circle a bunch of times.
Uh-huh.
And then eventually it comes out of that circle and goes into a room and shoots into a patient. And it's literally like if you had a tumor in your body, shoot it with bullets. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward idea. But the difficult part is when you shoot the tumor, let me compare it to x-ray. Okay, there's two types of radiation treatment that are important here. One is x-rays. That's the one that everyone is kind of, if anyone knows about radiation therapy, they've definitely heard about x-rays being used. And x-rays go through the body.
Mm-hmm.
And protons stop inside the body. That makes it difficult to know what exactly happened. So x-rays, they can go straight through the patient, and you can put a detector on the back side of the patient, and you know exactly where the x-rays went. They stop inside the patient, which is good. It prevents radiation on the far part beyond the tumor, but it also makes it just hard to know exactly where
the proton struck.
Yeah, exactly where they stop and in the patient, where they've deposited energy. And so what I'm doing is building a device that can try to pinpoint where the protons are actually depositing energy into the patient. So
how closely can they actually aim this? I mean, you're talking about a giant 10-meter ring, and then they're shooting it at this patient. Can they actually focus on a specific area, tumor?
Yeah, so that's the beauty of proton therapy. They have the control to stop it inside the patient. It's about a centimeter to 2 centimeters in diameter. So
okay.
That's roughly how focused it can be where it enters the patient. And then most patients, tumors that they'll do this for, you know, will be large enough to where that it kind of makes up for that 1 centimeter diameter.
Okay. So, how long have they been doing this kind of therapy, and do we know how kind of effective it is in cancer treatment?
Was first used, I think, in 49, I think the 50s. And then at that time, though, it was literally just like bring a patient into a physics lab. They do their best to, you know, calculate things, and then, you know, they had no way of knowing exactly what they were doing, but they just did their best. And it actually stayed that way until, and then in the 90s, different places, Loma Linda in California, Berkeley, just various places around the country, they started making actual facilities. Now it's, at this point, there's probably about 15 facilities in the United States. And, worldwide, I think there's probably, I don't know, I'm guessing here, but probably 30 to 40.
So my brother-in-law, who I mentioned is a medical physicist, also does radiation therapy. He got his PhD here at UW-Madison, went to Washington University and then Iowa. Now he's back. He's a clinical professor and does MRI-guided radiation therapy and proton therapy. So it probably awesome. Sounds really similar to what you're describing.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm getting a PhD in just traditional physics, and everyone in my lab actually just does fundamental nuclear physics.
Okay.
So we're kind of trying to bridge kind of devices and methods that you find in experimental nuclear physics and
with medical applications.
Yeah, bring that experience to the medical realm. And so what we're doing is kind of it's a type of detector that only a few labs across the world are building, and you can't really buy this. And so the Mayo Clinic, that's why they came they actually came to us, to my professor, you know, asked if we could build this. And so that's why, or that's where we're at now.
How's it going with the device that you're building? Are you fairly confident in what's happening there, or has it been a struggle thus far?
A decent struggle. It is, at this point, it is put together. So when the protons are entering the body, there's a chance they can actually hit nuclei as they're entering the body. And that's not actually the primary way of killing a tumor, but occasionally it happens. And when that happens, you get secondary radiation. So you get gamma rays or neutrons that come out of the body in all directions. So our device is basically, it's just trying to trace back the secondary radiation where it came from that exits the body. So what we've done is we've built an array of crystals, basically. There's 16 of them. We use like heavy tungsten and lead collimation to try to only allow radiation that's coming at a perpendicular angle from the beam. It has been a struggle. It's every time I get from one step to the next, it's just so much harder than I thought it was going to be. I keep this guy. So the Mayo Clinic, they're amazing. They've been super patient with us, but I think I've told him that we were going to be ready 2 to 6 months, probably like 6 times. And I'm not even kidding. It's taken a lot longer than I thought. So I love it though. I've learned a lot. It's all built pretty much from scratch.
Our listeners, I know, are all asking the same question, and it's, how important was The Legend of Zelda in inspiring this design? 16 crystals. I don't know if there's a direct Zelda influence on this or no.
I hate to say it. I'm not a huge Zelda or video game person, so
it's embarrassing.
Not very influential to me.
Wow. Well, missed opportunity for some cross-brand synergy.
Sorry about that.
So what got you into physics in the first place? Getting a PhD in physics is that's a pretty heavy
that's a big commitment.
Investment. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And I'm starting to realize how much of a commitment it was now. But anyways.
Now that you're deep in and totally committed, yeah.
Yeah. I just started my fifth year or five and a half years or something. So in high school, I just really did well in physics, in my physics classes, and I also, in high school, I remember watching Discovery Channel a lot. Always really drawn to just everything going on in the scientific world and especially in space. My research is really nothing to do with space anymore. Yeah, but that's sort of what got me going. And then I actually did music for a long time. My dad was an engineer, and he basically scared me away from doing this sort of thing. He was always telling me it was super hard and college was terrible and all this. So,
true things.
That's what dads are for.
Yeah. And he was probably right, but anyways, it scared me off. I just did music and I was really passionate about music. And so I played in bands. I just hadn't ever really challenged myself that much in my life. Music, I definitely took it really serious and I challenged myself in that way, but school was never a challenge, any of that. So I decided I wanted to do something I liked, which was physics, and I wanted to challenge myself. And so I never thought I was going to do a PhD. I wanted to be a teacher at first, like a high school teacher.
Yeah.
I realized that that would be pretty miserable. So I just went and just
several years of graduate school, definitely not miserable at all. That's the good life.
Yeah.
I'm going on 10 years now, so.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah.
Ah, jeez. Come on, Steele.
I know.
You need to finish your PhD. You're not doing any proton torpedoes. You just need to finish your poetry, man.
Honestly. So I have a question, Jason, about the relationship. So in my mind, at least, music and mathematics are kind of similar in some ways in the way that they think about abstract representation and like ideals and harmonies, et cetera. But did you know any adults who were working scientists or who did science or physics for a living? I mean, you mentioned your dad was an engineer, but were there any people in your life that you're like, oh, this is what it means to be a scientist, or had any reference points before you went to college?
Not really. I mean, no, I mean, my dad was an engineer, and so his friends were often engineers. And so I definitely type of person, and myself, I've always been very much more of a logical person as opposed to an emotional person. And I don't know. I didn't have some scientist influence really, but I did have a lot of engineers in my life. So,
But so Jason, something that our listeners debate a lot is really who are the top physicists of all time. So it's something that we get lots of questions about, lots of letters.
They like rank your physicists because they know off the chain we really have a lot of opinions about physicists.
And we do, and me and Steele have talked about it a bunch of times about it, addressing it, but we just didn't feel qualified. So we're going to throw it to you. Give me your top three physicists.
Okay. First of all, I don't know if I'm the greatest authority on this, but.
No, you are. Now of the three of us, for sure.
There's been many great physicists. I'll tell you my favorites. I don't know. These are not the best physicists. These are just my favorites. Hans Bethe. He is a physicist who had an extremely long career. He got the Nobel Prize. And one of the things he did is he basically calculated the way that particles, the amount of energy they deposit as they go into some type of material. And that's very applicable to the work I do. So I've had to kind of work through some of those equations. And actually, I see physics a lot of times as study of history, except in, you know, from a different language, from math, from a mathematical language, you know. Honestly, everything you learn in graduate school is just literally history or just the same work that other physicists have done. So I've enjoyed going through some of his work. And then,
before you move on, I think the listeners need to know, I mean, Hans Bethe was famous for his accomplishments in the field of physics, but he also had a world-class forehead, probably one of the largest foreheads in the history of science.
Physicists look weird often, I have to admit, yeah.
But this guy doesn't just look weird, he looks impressive, like that, like he's like, you think Germans have large forehead? I have enormous forehead, and I really respect and admire Hans Bethe for that.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. That's a good reason to respect him, I agree. One last thing about him, he basically wrote down, I think the story is that he went to some conference and all these physicists were debating, like, you know, how does the sun get its energy? What is it doing? And apparently, I think the story goes that he, that day, wrote down like 90% of the interactions that are required, all the nuclear interactions. And so, and that's what he got his Nobel Prize in, was describing how stars, the energy cycle of stars.
And it was just because he heard a bunch of guys at a conference wondering and complaining about this. So he just like, all right, I'll just throw out some Nobel winning work.
Yeah. He put his forehead to work and he got it done.
Cogitated.
He pounded his forehead against the wall for a while and it worked. So the next one on my list is Michael Faraday. He's very much an experimentalist. In fact, he wasn't even very good at math, but really great at building devices and measurement and just had a great intuition for physics. Some of the things he did was he helped to connect basically electricity, magnetism, and light. He found that there was a link between all of those phenomena. In his day, they thought all those were separate. So he was able to show that, you know, if you run a current through a wire, you get magnetic fields, and he could show that with a compass near a wire, or essentially the opposite. You run a magnet by a coil and it generates a current. So he showed that those things could happen. And eventually he showed also that light and magnetism was related, which is because it's just something you would never sort of figure could be the case. He kind of worked with Maxwell, James Clerk Maxwell, and he's another famous physicist, but he was more theoretical. So he did a lot of the math behind those same experimental results that Faraday found. So,
and I'm going to say once again, Jason, these are beautiful scientific accomplishments, but you're burying the lead a little bit. Dave, I just put a picture of Michael Faraday in our show notes document holding a glass bar. And if you look closely at this haircut, Dave, do you recognize that haircut?
Oh, I see it. I see it.
It's a world-class center part, what it looks like. It's excellent.
That's about a half inch away from being the Dave Jensen, I'd have to say. So again, another reason to really admire and respect the great scientist Michael Faraday. He was centuries ahead in terms of men's hair fashion, which I think we'll get to later in the show. But
yeah, he looks good. I like it.
And he's got a handsomeness to him too. I feel like he's a little bit debonair.
He's a showman. You know, he does experiments.
I think my favorite fashion time for physics was like, 50s, Manhattan Project, when they would all wear their white shirts, pocket protectors, and their glasses. I like that they were all dressed up. You know, nowadays physicists are like, just wear the most ridiculous things to work every day. And so does everyone else. So.
But that, fact, you, that was the era when physicists had class. They had panache, some style.
Yeah, it's
very
true.
Boring style, but it was style. Huh? CIA chic.
And give us another one.
So believe it or not, Nikola Tesla, he's not someone who comes up in your physics education, your traditional physics education.
More rock history, right?
Tesla. Yeah. Okay. a lot of people ask me about him that aren't in the physics community, and everyone kind of on the outside thinks that he should be praised a lot more or whatnot. But anyways, I do like him a lot. I don't know if you would call him necessarily a physicist, but he was definitely an inventor, and he had to know a lot of physics to do what he did. So he's just a really amazing human. You can look at his pictures with the Tesla coils going on, and he just all around him, and he's just sitting there reading a book or doing other things. You could just tell that he had a real command on what he was doing. He really understood it. He wasn't afraid, so.
Complete the trifecta. When you said look at his pictures, I got a little excited, and I actually started looking at pictures of Tesla. I dropped a couple of there in those. As you take a look here, Dave, young Tesla, and then steal your wife Tesla. I mean, talk about just predatory eyes and that mustache. Nikola Tesla.
Oh, man.
His hair is hypnotizing.
I think the mustache is what sells it. Cause young Tesla, I'm not that impressed. Mustache Tesla, like suddenly, like this guy could talk his way into anything.
But,
and,
young Tesla has Beavis and Butthead's haircut. Did you notice that? He's the originator of the Beavis and Butthead cut.
He is cutting edge for a lot of reasons.
He really was.
So much so that when they put him in a film, the only person they could think to have play him was David Bowie. So.
Wow. Yeah, that's great. Good choices. So Beta Faraday Tesla, that's your holy grail.
Yeah, I guess so. Those are three of my favorites.
Well, Jason, we've been edging towards this. We also have a lot of listeners that like us to discuss haircuts and hairstyles at great length. It's something we get asked. So this is something we feel a little bit more comfortable addressing. Okay. Best hair in physics. And of course we want your opinion. But in this section, you are the layman. Just remember that.
So you know how they have those calendars that are like, studs and spurs, and it'll be like hot hunks from the Cowboys with, you know, shirtless dudes, or they have like firemen. We were thinking about if you were to make a hot hair of physics calendar, you got 12 months, you need 12 great haircuts. We're trying to think of some of the people that you just definitely couldn't leave off the calendar fold, as it were.
Should we just go January as Einstein? I mean, yeah, Einstein's got classic hair, classic look, something that I think most physicists aspire to.
He's going to sell the calendar. A lot of people are going to pick up the calendar and make sure it's in their home because Einstein's on it. But really, once you start opening the pages, you realize there's other months. There's 11 other months. And there really are at least 11 other great hairdos of physics. One of my personal favorites actually is classic Sir Isaac Newton. I mean, it was an era with the kind of curls and the wigs and all that. But he really did wear it well.
Yeah, this is my favorite one, I think, because I just like to imagine him doing physics, you know, sitting somewhere with his big wig. Yeah, he probably didn't wear it in his own, but I like to imagine it that way.
I'm going to toss in another kind of a Newton look here that I don't know if you considered, but I think it really completes the look for him. And this is less of the formal wig. This is more of the poodle about town wig, I think they call it. And what I like to envision is Newton's got a real tough problem, and he's trying to solve a physics problem. You know, some people would like tap their chin or like, but Newton, I'm pretty sure, is just twirling his fingers in his long, luxurious hair, you know? And that unlocks. That's the secret of mental calculation for Newton, I'm pretty sure. So we got Einstein is January. Isaac Newton is Miss February. Who do you think is pulling in as Mr. March?
Oh, man. You want March to be surprising and intriguing. You want it to be J. Robert Oppenheimer.
Tell me about J. Robert.
So he knows how to shape his hair, how to sculpt it. It's less of a haircut, more of a hair sculpture. The curls stand erect about 6 inches off the head with a nice side part. And it adds an allure, a mystery, and I think a charm to him.
I look at him and I think if Art Garfunkel were a physicist, he'd want to be J. Robert Oppenheimer. That's what I think when I see that.
Have you guys seen haircut fails? Like on YouTube or anything?
No.
No.
Well, I thought I was the layman here with haircuts, but.
I guess we're the idiots now, huh?
Oh, jeez.
To check it out, because some of these look like a haircut fail, and check it out on YouTube. You can see people just rip their hair out, mostly girls actually, so it's kind of funny too, but.
So, Jason, maybe you could take April for us, because this is a physicist you have a special affinity for.
All right, let's check him out.
Hans Bethe.
Out of here, it starts with the massive forehead.
Mm, it really
right.
does.
And he likes to particularly accentuate his forehead, I think. Uh-huh. I think that's one thing he really likes about himself, obviously. Hair straight back and as high as it can go. It's a solid look.
There's a picture of him chatting up a woman that I just posted in the document. And it's kind of a cross between someone who might be typecast to play the devil and Dr. Stephen Brule, like John C. Reilly. He's got a good, like, devil meets just mildly handicapped person. I feel almost bad at saying it, but he is our Mr. April, and I think we just got to own the look. Or is he May?
So, most of those people have normal-looking hair. What do you think it is about these physicists that drives them to having this hair?
I think it's probably it's the legacy. Einstein set he's the trendsetter, and they all want to prove that it's brand Einstein maybe for these guys.
I think it's an expression of their work through their hair. They like, you know, they want physics to be it's in the natural realm. It's a natural thing, and they just want it to be there so that people immediately when they see them, they know, like, I understand that this guy knows all about sun, like, obviously.
So, I mean, you guys we're talking about dorks with dorky hair so far, but when we come to the meat of the calendar, this is the one the ladies often turn to first. This is, what they call him, Dr. May, and this is the international sex icon, Michio Kaku, famous, I think, for his contributions to string theory. But look at that hair on his faculty profile.
Oh, my gosh. He is so handsome. I remember I first saw his hairstyle years ago, and it's just stayed with me. And if I had the confidence, that's what I would do.
He's worn it when it was dark. It's become salt and pepper. He's one of those silver foxes that just gets better with age, I think. Dave, I don't know if this guy was yours or whose it was, but June is the one that asks people to be for a lifetime subscription to the catalog or to the magazine.
this guy would
not be out of place at like a George Clinton playing bass with the P-Funk All-Stars.
I think that describes it perfectly. He looks great. He's a brilliant physicist from what I understand, but just a handsome African-American gentleman, bearded. I don't know how to describe this, but it's a beautiful flowing waterfall down all sides of his head.
It's the Black Bob Ross is what they call it, Dave.
Okay. I should have known.
Oh, all right. I got one for you from July.
Okay.
This is another summer do. This one, it combines incredible glasses with a super wispy beard and probably the quintessential middle-aged physicist look.
Mm.
It's the very thin comb over. It's like probably like equal length of hair from the sides to the top. And it's just like a solid band of like 4 inches of hair in basically a rainbow over the top of his head.
Which and it's one is, great, this?
Is this? This is Ashoki Sen. Ashoki Sen. Classic. I think he had been blackballed and forced from his by his government to stop his physics research, and then became a hero as he migrated elsewhere. But man, oh man, terrific glasses. We've got a friend, Courtney Bex. Dave, I don't know if she's ever been on the show, but she just picked up a matching pair of those glasses, and I'll tell you what, they look good on everybody. They just really look good on everyone.
I don't think we want to ruin the entire calendar. I think there's got to be some surprises in there. I'm just going to take us
one or two more highlights, Dave. What do you got?
Yeah. I like Mr. December. I'm a big fan of Rolf Dieter.
Tell me more about Rolf Dieter Heuer, the director of CERN.
Just a great goatee, which we know is an excellent look for anybody. And just, a full white head of hair, and he's really owning it. He's letting it just grow right over his ears and just right where his earlobes end, just all around, almost the bob.
I believe he got this haircut as a tribute to Doris Day, actually. He's had it since he was a 14-year-old girl, so.
Any others that you want to throw out there, Steele or Jason?
Mine is Abdus Salam. Great smile, great glasses, great hair.
Yeah.
Beard all over the face. He's got the cheek beard that's a different color from the beard, and it's kind of scraggly on the neck. And then just kind of the wispy hair pulled back, devil may care, and just a winning smile. I think he's somebody that you could take home to grandma. He's somebody that you could just proudly pin on your wall. He's somebody that makes the calendar really pop.
And you're underselling kind of the twinkle in his eyes is just really just draws you in.
Mischievous, impish even. And then last one is Hannibal Lecter. If you look at Robert Hooke, just check out that image.
Oh, yeah.
You guys have to see this Robert Hooke painting.
Yeah, that's a scary one. Very scary.
I don't know how you describe this other than entirely dead-eyed.
Very much an amateur painting as well, which adds to the terror.
But he was a legendary prog rock guitarist. If you look at the length of those fingers and that haircut, he would have fit right in, shredding and Yes or something.
Jason, we're going to finish. I've got some rapid-fire physics questions I want you to address that I think are pretty important for us. Yeah, for everybody, for the understanding of the universe. You're just going to respond to them in whatever way you feel is appropriate. Time travel, what do you think?
I don't know. I think that it's not going to happen anytime soon. I haven't heard of anyone doing anything realistic with this. I know that there really are physicists working on this, but they're generally seen as kind of kooky and unrealistic. So I don't know. I don't have much of an opinion on it.
I have to press on this skepticism about not doing it anytime soon. The idea of soon would be eradicated as soon as they had mastered time travel. Then they'd be able to do it really whenever, right?
Well, I mean, some of the folklore is that if you a time machine, you can only go back to that time.
Ah, I see.
So
you can't travel before the invention of the time machine.
Maybe when we first invent it, we'll know it because someone will show up.
Good.
And there's obviously a natural danger in time travel. If you meet yourself at a different point in time, the universe could end. So that's something to think about.
I can say a couple more things, actually. So
You baited him. Now he's come alive.
I'll just say that we know that entropy increases over time. I don't even want to tell, I don't really know. I don't want to describe what entropy is, but it's just
we know the heat death of the universe, things fall apart.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Exactly.
Entropy rules me
because it lives in entropy is when I pile a set of rocks in my yard and my kids just run around and it just falls apart. Or when I give my kids a hose and they evenly water the yard.
Entropy is having children, more or less, is what you're saying. If you have children, you understand entropy.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. I've heard a quote that toddlers are the stormtroopers of entropy.
That should be a best-selling kids t-shirt.
Yeah. Entropy moves in one direction, and so that gives us some insight on time. That's what I wanted to say about time. So time travel, it moves in one direction, so I don't know about it.
You said travel to the future is possible is what you're saying.
I'm doing it right now, Dave. We're all moving into the future. Come on. Life is time travel.
All right. Faster than light travel.
Whoa.
There have been some reported cases that crop up every few years about some type of particle going faster than light. And every single time it always ends up not being true. So
I saw Usain Bolt in those 2012 Olympics though. I believe in it.
I don't really, this is another that it seems like exciting. Some people think that if you go faster than light that you'll actually be going back in time, but I don't buy it.
All right.
Sorry.
Ant-Man, is he real?
Physics question?
Honestly, I loved this movie. One of my physics colleagues won't see it. He absolutely hates the idea that when you get smaller, all of a sudden you're like punching harder than you could when you were huge. Because even though ants are strong, like they're only strong relative to their size, not like a person. So it doesn't make any sense. He hates that. So he's a physicist. He hates it. I actually love it. I just like the movie. I thought it was a really funny movie.
I think this is a great business idea, Dave. We get like a big physics seminar and we just screen blockbuster movies, but we pause them every minute or two and just record the argument. Like having a bunch of physicists arguing about the implausibility of the various things. Wouldn't that be amazing just to be a fly on the wall for? You could be like the occasional shit stirrer, just be like, oh, I don't know. I think this, and just seeing people go off. That'd be so fun.
That'd be a podcast people would actually want to listen to.
It really would.
Ant-Man really goes for like some deep physics at the end of the movie. Do you remember when he is, I'm like sort of, it's a cloudy memory, but he's like just shrinking and he somehow has to shrink even smaller and he goes like beyond the like atomic size and even into the nucleus or something. I don't really recall, but they really went for it there.
It was dangerous. It was, yeah quantum mechanics I'm sure were involved.
Yeah, yeah, strange forces.
So some more important ones. Teleportation. When is this happening?
I don't know. So
disintegrate our bodies and reintegrate them somewhere else. Are we ever going to do that?
Yeah. This would involve, you know, some of these other concepts, faster than light travel or time travel. You know, people are, they claim that you can possibly make wormholes that, allow you to travel in a different, to a different place. I don't know. I don't really think it's possible. So
that's disappointing.
You just have to have the right modem, Dave. I think you can do it today. You can teleport if you just had the right modem.
Well, I saw a documentary from the 80s where Jeff Goldblum actually did this, but the problem was that there was a fly that was transported with him.
Oh no, he got his head.
Yeah. So it was pretty terrible, but so that's really why I think people aren't working on it anymore, is because they saw what happened to Jeff Goldblum.
That's why people aren't. There's a lot of things that people aren't working on anymore because they saw what happened to Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, the dinosaur cloning. That's all. Jeff Goldblum's his whole career is just a warning against science progression. It's terrible.
Yeah, he set back science at least 200 years.
And then my last rapid fire question for you. These guys that do physics at home and they've proved Einstein is wrong. These guys are awesome, right?
They're really awesome. I'm glad you asked me about this one. actually, I'm not kidding. Literally today, halls of the physics department, there was this long haired guy wandering around just bothering students that would walk by. He'd just ask them if he could talk to them about his theory. You know, basically his universal theory. That doesn't happen very often. We just get these guys. But the real headquarters for this is LinkedIn. If you look around on LinkedIn, you'll find these dudes that, if you just look at their LinkedIn page, you would think they're the most accomplished physicists that ever lived. All of their buddies also are the most accomplished physicists that ever lived. And they just go back and forth, just building each other's resumes. So actually I really don't like it, because they really feel that they have some authority on physics. Not that anyone really does, but that LinkedIn is the headquarters. If you want to see some really far out conversations about that make absolutely no sense, go
please
to LinkedIn.
We want you to give us at least one link for this and I'll probably spend a week or two just enjoying that and we'll share it on the website when the episode goes up. But yeah, feed us some good LinkedIn physics. It sounds like the place for cutting edge discussions of the state of the science.
Yeah, I will. I'll put a link up.
Forget archive. It's LinkedIn where the real physics research gets discussed.
There is another kooky physics site. It's pretty funny. I don't remember what it's called, but if you just Google like archive or fake archive or something,
okay,
you'd probably find it. And it's a random generator for article names.
Oh, nice.
And it literally just goes, it just picks very scientific sounding name or words and just jumbles them together. And then it just,
I think I just found it. It's archive versus snarkive.
Yep, yeah, that's it.
I love it. That's cool. Thank you.
Well, we've learned so much about physics hair, and Jason's just not on the cutting edge of physics, which is why he doesn't believe that time travel or teleportation or anything that Jeff Goldblum's doing is happening.
Take it easy, Dave.
But
he's still working on his PhD. He'll get there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Eventually I'll understand this stuff like you guys.
You just,
not plural, it's singular. Dave's the only one. I just along for the ride. I'm just boosting his LinkedIn page. That's all he has me around for.
you just need to listen to that guy in the hallway today, Jason. He could have really turned you on to something.
I should have, yeah. One of my colleagues literally got out of his chair and sprinted to the door and shut it when he heard that this guy was there. This guy's a weird guy that I work with, but yeah, he did that. That's pretty funny.
That's great.
Well, guys, we have one more quick segment before we get to Unchained Melodies and to some book wisdom. Again, our listeners ask a lot of us, and we try and give them a lot. It's just something that we try and do. Keep getting questions about parenting tips. So we're going to do a section, Off the Chain Parenting Tips. Steel, you got anything? Anything for these people out there?
Yeah, I do. First thing is, this is one of the things that I've enjoyed most about parenting, and it is, I have a three-year-old. I think the crucial thing for a lot of these, there's a lot of times where they don't want to do stuff. And you can compel them and sort of force them, hold them down and make them do stuff. But that's not good parenting. And it's not fun for them or fun for you. So the trick that we've really been doing, that I've been working on, is making stuff that our son doesn't want to do into a game. So he doesn't want to take a bath anymore. And he doesn't want to get undressed for the bath. And so what he does want to do is pretend to be a goalie and do goalie practice. So what we'll do is we'll get the soccer ball out, play goalie practice, but after every save, it's like strip goalie practice where he has to remove an article of clothing. So it's like strip poker, but soccer. So he's going to, I'm sure, have some weird erotic stuff with soccer later in life. But for now, we're playing a game that leads to the bath, and he just thinks it's fun. And now he wants to do goalie practice before bath every time. It's working. It's a parenting tip.
That's lifted directly from Mary Poppins. She just turned cleaning the house into a song and fun. But she's a great parenting authority.
Yeah.
Jason, you got any good parenting tips you've been sitting on?
Just back rubs, just back scratching.
Yes.
Just in general. Actually, it's a good marriage advice as well. I'm not kidding. My kids can be completely flipping out, just throwing huge tantrums, and I'll just start scratching their back. And then if I stop for any moment of time, they're like, can you scratch my back? It changes them. They just, with whatever they were doing, and they just want their back scratched. So
that's the primary reason I stayed active in the church through my teen years. My dad and my mom would scratch my back during church, and I'm like, I can sit in sacrament meeting all hour.
See? It works.
So guys, I got a big one for you. Huge parenting tip. It's going to change your life. I'll just tell you, pretending to not know you're sitting on one of your kids when you are sitting on them. Huge comedy gold. Best thing you can do.
It's so good. Or we will put a blanket on top of Cedar, and I'll pretend to make the bed really smooth, and I roll out the lump, and he just thinks it's hilarious. That is a great parent move, all-time classic.
Any others you want to throw out there, Steele?
No, I don't think so. There's probably none that I probably should share.
We alluded to this in our last episode, but a big parenting tip that Steele's a little bit shy to share is total and complete honesty with your kids at all times. Just lay it out for us.
So here's what we've been doing. We go to the library, we check out books, but I don't censor anything in them. So we've got a couple of children books that are real heavy. They're about like slavery, or they're about war. And so Cedar will ask a question, and I'll just tell him the unvarnished truth about war, about death, about slavery. We watch nature documentaries where like lions are ripping wildebeests apart. He's seen sharks hunting. He understands nature is red in tooth and claw, but he also understands to some degree that everyone will die. And so he asks some questions about that. And instead of being like wrapping it on metaphor and making it distant. So far, I've just taken the tack of saying, yeah. He's like, Dad, are we going to die? And I'll say, yes, yes, we will die. Hopefully not soon. You know, like I try to tell him how I feel about it a little bit too, but what's that?
What's your approach for Christmas? Tooth fairies or?
No, we'll say, yeah, some people believe in that. I don't, or we don't believe in it, or like he's read books about Santa and he recognizes Santa and it's like, oh, that's Santa. And we'll say like, oh, that's imaginary Santa or that's pretend Santa or whatever. And so he's still excited about Santa. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're really brutal with him. He's going to have.
Do your parents follow along on that?
I don't know. They don't see him that often, so they can tell him what they want. It's fine. I think it's cool because kids are going to get all different sources of information through their lives. Pretty soon he's going to start watching TV and the advertisers are going to lie to him for the rest of his life. So might as well try to tell him the truth while you have him.
Wait,
I like that.
You're implying commercials are lying still? That's ridiculous.
I know. We should get Alan back on to refute me point by point.
I got one more tip here for you. So you're going to a restaurant. You have a ton of children. What do you do? Like things are going to get out of hand real quick.
Just don't go.
Yeah. What we do is we either don't go or we make sure that they have one of those like high seats that you can buckle the kid in. And then we're like, well, what's the worst that can happen? You can't tip it over.
So Jason, you're letting the fear control you, and Steele, you're restricting your child when really what you should be doing is entertaining your child. Anytime you take your kids to a restaurant, you just need to be armed with stories, and you need to be telling them stories the entire time. Really compelling stuff. Bonus points if you're talking about the X-Men the whole time you're in a restaurant and your children ask loud questions about Rogue and Storm.
Okay, Dave, Cedar went to the library last time and he gets to pick, I pick out a bunch of children's books usually that I think would be good and then he picks out his own. This last time he picked out a comic book about Wolverine.
Nice.
And so he's been reading that and there's like a pack of Wolverines that attack him and bite him in the shoulder. It's like pretty intense. And he's like obsessed with it. I think partially because it's like fear and interest. So he's like reading about Wolverine all the time and wants to know more about Wolverine and mutants. So that's the latest, obsession in our house. So I think he would love your restaurant stories.
Jason, any more tips for us?
Yeah. Just don't go to restaurants. Leave immediately. If you do end up at a restaurant, actually, I do like to just let my kids kind of, I'm one of those parents that lets them do whatever they want, kind of. And I just love them a lot and just let them do what they want for the most part. Obviously, it's not always that way, but that's my general philosophy.
I like it. I think your kids probably like that too.
Yeah, they do.
That's important.
So there's our parenting tips for you guys. So yeah, Steele and Jason shared some things and I shared some important things. So
when we get to 5 or 6, we'll come back and tell you our lessons learned.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're just starting out. I'm just a rookie.
So we're going to close this down with some Unchained Melodies. And of course we're going to do songs about physics or having to do with physics. This is, Watching the Planets by the Flaming Lips. Eventually they send words to it.
What's that? That's like the movie soundtrack to like a cult kidnapping version of Hansel and Gretel or something, Dave. I think that's pretty good. Very, very creepy vibe.
As any song involving physics should be, from the hair that we've just discussed.
Yeah. Don't leave your child alone with the physicist is what you're saying, Dave.
All right. Unless you are a physicist with two, nearly three children.
Yeah.
And we're going to the physicist.
Hang out with your own Jason. Kids, not other people's
yeah.
kids.
Yeah, kind of physicists out there.
I was thinking Rocket Man by Elton John.
Love this song.
Hey, unlike what Dave picked, this one actually has a lot of lyrics that talk about, not really talk about physics, but it really sticks with this theme. It's based on a Ray Bradbury book, by the way. I looked that up on Wikipedia.
Whoa, I did not know that.
Yeah, it is.
Very literary as well. Yeah. Dave's just picking songs that have titles that vaguely sound like astronomy. He doesn't even understand what the discipline of physics is.
It's sorry, about planets, guys. Come on, back last night, free flight. 0 hour, 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then.
The guitar, this song's real good.
I miss the earth so much. I miss my wife. It's lonely out in space on such a timeless flight. And I think it's gonna be long time to touch down, bring me around and get to find. I'm not the man that think I am at home. No. I'm a rocket man, burning out of you that I feel at home.
That brings back a lot of memories for me. My dad loved Elton John growing up, and I also think there's nobody, on reflection, there's nobody who sings longer choruses that remain melodic. Like, the chorus has like 74 words. It's not just like a four-word chorus repeated. It's like a super long chorus, and yet, like, it's melodic and memorable. I don't know how Elton John does it.
It is such a good chorus, though. Like, I mean, the verses are great, but the chorus is just iconic.
The words on that one to me, they really are sort of kind of scientific. It's about this guy who goes off into space. He leaves his family behind for a long time, and it really reminds me of kind of what I do. Like, I don't leave my family for long periods of time, but I literally work alone a lot, just completely alone. I'll be in dark rooms for hours, and it's just sometimes science, you sort of are on your own, and so I like that aspect of the song.
The solitary pursuit of science. Yeah, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. So I was torn on my choice here, Dave. I know the best choice I could have picked probably would have been Radiohead, Super Collider. But you've played so much Radiohead on the show in the past, Dave. I'm not going to pick Radiohead. In fact, I'm going to pick another band that I think you'll also love, Dave. This is one of the earliest songs that I remember really loving and playing hundreds of times. And it's They Might Be Giants, Particle Man.
Particle Man, Particle Man, doing the things a particle can. What's he like? It's not important. Particle Man, is he a dot or is he a speck? When he's underwater, does he get wet? Or does the water get him instead? Nobody knows. Particle Man. Triangle Man, Triangle Man. Triangle Man hates Particle Man. They have a fight, Triangle wins. Triangle Man.
I don't know what that instrument was, if it's like a calliope or what, but I had to just leave the song on until the...
those guys, I was listening to them all last week at work for some reason. They have a whole album about science that's actually enjoyable, kinda, you know?
Yeah, like all science-related things.
This is another one where the title sounds like it has something to do with physics, and the song really doesn't, which I know is what we were shooting for. So this is Modest Mouse, Gravity Rides Everything. Modest Mouse when I was like 20, and I still love that song. It's really good.
Is Never Ending Math Equation vaguely physics-y or no? I don't know the lyrical content. Well,
math equation, yeah. Universe is built on a math equation that never even ever is in it. That's their.
That's like the entropy, the red Doppler effect, red shift, maybe. I don't know.
I screwed up. I should have picked that one.
Dave, I've been telling you that. And with what? I was also criticizing your other Flaming Lips choice, telling you there's a better physics one too. I'm a real jerk, aren't I?
Yeah, just enjoy the music, Steele. Come on.
All right.
So I'm a pretty big Coldplay, like early 2000s to mid 2000s fan.
Great.
I'm honestly not a fan of the modern stuff, but some really good music in there. And, this is, Speed of Sound by Coldplay. And the chorus and the leading up to it is really good.
It's just Coldplay, all their songs from that era is just immediately recognizable. Oh, that's Coldplay. Yeah. It's got the driving piano.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the drums too. They do that similar kind of drum beat there for a lot of it.
You picked two soaring piano driven tracks there, Jason.
I know. I wasn't doing that on purpose. Just happened.
What was your instrument?
I played guitar, bass, vocals, so keyboard.
No relationship at all. Just,
yeah, not much.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so here's my last physics one. You got to go out with a bang, they say. This is a Nigerian legend, a forgotten legend, William Anyabor, and the song is called Atomic Bomb.
Oh, boy.
I keep trying to find the chorus, but I'm failing.
It's really good. Really compelling.
Dave, you gotta look up that album cover. This guy's got a look that you should imitate.
I've got a lot of looks to imitate for that we discussed today.
Yeah. The Physicists and William Anyabor. He's wearing like a business suit with the power tie, got a kind of a bushy afro, mutton chop sideburns, and a white cowboy hat. It's pretty much the look I want from my nurse practitioner.
I've considered the cowboy hat many times in my life. Like, am I ready to jump in on this? I don't think I can do it. People are taken aback enough when they walk in the room and they see me and I go, this guy's supposed to be taking care of me today? What?
Sorry, man. One day.
Another podcast is coming to an end and
heartbreak.
Of course we will finish that with book wisdom. This is actually, I'm going to share. This is a passage. It's a pretty famous story, but it's a passage from Stephen Hawking's book, A Brief History of Time. A well-known scientist, some say it was Bertrand Russell, once gave a public lecture on astronomy. He described how the Earth orbits around the Sun and how the Sun in turn orbits around the center of a vast collection of stars called our galaxy. At the end of the lecture, a little old lady at the back of the room got up and said, "What you have told us is rubbish. The world is really a flat plate supported on the back of a giant tortoise." The scientist gave a superior smile before replying, "What is the tortoise standing on?" "You're very clever, young man, very clever," said the old lady. "But it's turtles all the way down."
Talk about a cosmology, a complete cosmology. I'm convinced.
Yeah, I don't think you can say anything to that, Jason. It's turtles all the way down.
No, I couldn't argue that one. That one's solid.
Well, Jason, thanks for joining us tonight and sharing us some of your expertise.
Yeah, I was glad to be on. Thanks for having me.
Off the chain. It's off the chain.
You know, if I were in charge of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles franchise, I'd make TMNT4 Turtles All the Way Down.
Have Splinter read this quote at some point.
Like a real movie villain voiceover. It's Turtles All the Way Down.
I think that settles it. Let's just move to Hollywood. Make this happen. Enough of this screwing around with PhDs